Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. Recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new Media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Now, my name is James P. Conley. I know a lot of you don't recognize me, and I may not be a household name to you, but that is all part of the master plan. You know, a lot of guys, they get famous, they become a household name, what happens? That's right, the career is over. A guy like me has a lot of shows nobody ever watches. I can do that crap for the rest of my life.
I was stuck in the car a few weeks ago, waiting to pick up my wife at work, tuning around the Sirius satellite radio dial, looking for a few laughs. I had heard the Howard Stern show that was on earlier in the day, so I didn't need to listen to that again, and I went a few clicks past it and landed on the Blue Collar Comedy Channel. Now, the voice I heard, the inflection particularly, sounded a little like Steve Martin. Now, it wasn't him, but the performer had me laughing the way I used to 30 years ago upon hearing new material from Martin. This fellow, named James P. Conley, he had me in stitches with his routine about how men, when it came to sizing up women, were either ass, breast, or leg men. Now, I won't even try to tell his jokes here, but it was so fun. It was so much fun listening that I put it on pause and replayed it for my wife when she got in the car. Now, Mrs. Media is not usually in the mood for stand-up comedy, from me or anyone else, when she gets out of work, but this time I insisted she listen. And 3 minutes later, she was laughing as hard as I was, and I was convulsing all over again. So I did something I had never done before. I tracked down a comedian I had heard on Sirius and invited him on the show based on maybe, you know, 4 or 5 minutes of material. Now, Conley is not an unknown by any means, having performed at the Comedy Store and the Improv. He hosted Movie Obsessions on VH1 and has appeared frequently on the nationally syndicated Bob and Tom radio show. He's also released a CD, The Master Plan, which you can order on his website, www.jamespconnelly.tv. I was going to say .com, but it's not .com, it's .tv. Now, I'm not sure where we go from here, but James, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, it's happy to be here. I tell you what, anybody that I've never met before that for a few minutes of spending time with me, I can set you into convulsions the second time around, it's an honor to meet you.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I've seen people convulse straight out the gate, but to stop, replay, and convulse the second time, I mean, it's either you or me, but one of us is a genius.
It ain't me, my friend.
No, maybe we have a connection. Maybe you're just preset to convulse when I talk, so.
Well, kind of like that guy who used to have seizures when he saw Mary Hart on Entertainment Weekly, or Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah. Exactly. If I can be part of your medical problem, it's an honor, Bob. It's an honor.
Well, if I start convulsing, maybe you can just take charge of the show. Maybe you will anyway.
Not a problem, yeah. Sit down, baby. I got this one.
All right. You just take it from there. So, you know, I'm sure I'm not the first person who has noticed that similarity in either your voice or inflection.
Well, you know, it's just, I think, like, just growing up listening to Steve Martin, that kind of inflection just kind of got stuck in my head at some point. So I've been slowly taking medication to wean myself off the inflection. And I got to tell you, there are periodic convulsions involved. It's a slow and steady process. But I get that. I get Ted Knight from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I get Jay Peterman. I get assorted superheroes. I get all kinds of stuff. I had people tell me they thought I was much taller. They thought I sounded like a black man. I've heard everything. I don't know what it is.
I would say you're a lucky guy. You've got, and the thing that got me was, you know, that voice, I was like, you know, unfortunately with Sirius or XM, you get that display and you can see who you're listening to. And I thought, man, after all these years, somebody has nailed that. It's kind of a, you know, and I read Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up, and, you know, you in there, I don't know if you've read it, but you see how he just worked so hard to develop that kind of voice and that character, and then, you know, he stopped doing it. He just left it. And to hear someone, you're your own man. I don't want to give people the wrong idea. The comedy that you do is completely different than Martin, but there's a tonality, there's something there that if you If you were a fan of Steve Martin, if you miss that kind of humor, you got to hear James P. Conley. It's just it'll take you back, and you will not be sorry.
Oh, I appreciate that. I, you know, I like to think of it as kind of a lot of arrogance with no substance. I think that's kind of the thing. A lot of, you know, and it's not really an act. You didn't ask my younger sister. I tortured her like this all growing up, and so when she saw me performing, she's like, "Really? You're going to do that to the rest of the world now too?"
Now, does your family find you funny, or are they like, "I can't believe he's making a living doing that"?
Well, I would no. I'm sure they probably are always saying, "I can't believe he's making a living doing that." But everybody, actually, my brother and sister, it was a very fun family. All three siblings, they were razor sharp at our dinner table. It was like coming and sharpening your blade and setting it on the table. It was just like a kind of like a comedic samurai warriors going after each other every night, and the best man or woman would win and walk away until the next meal.
And could you only pull that on each other, or were parents involved, or, you know,
I would say that my mother was entertained by it all. My father probably would have preferred if we'd have just closed our mouths and ate our food. He didn't quite get the fact that we were kind of, it was fun for us. But my mom's got a good sense. My grandfather was a very funny man too. So he actually lost half his finger in working in the shipyards of World War II, and so we only had a half a finger. But you know, as a grandfather, you know, sometimes the grandfather will do that sliding thumb trick where he pretends he has a half a finger. Well, my grandfather would do it and then reveal to the kids an actual half finger, and I thought that was the funniest damn thing I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, the look of horror, you're like, wow, this man's good. I like that.
You know, it just took me back. I had an uncle, and this was 40 years ago now, who was a magician, mostly an amateur, but he did some professional gigs. And, yeah, he did, you know, he'd do the disappearing the coins and out the ear, and then he'd do the finger thing. And, oh, my God, you know, when you're a certain age, you just fall for it. But if you're telling me your grandfather would then really had only half a finger, oh, my God. Oh,
this is brilliant. I mean, imagine the child familiar with the trick, waiting for the half thumb thing, seen it done probably a million times before by their own fathers and uncles, probably not impressed at all. And then when the reveal is an actual half finger, it's just you can't do that. I mean, that's commitment. I'm not even implying that maybe he did have the finger taken off just so he could do the trick. I wouldn't put it past him. He was a professional. But I always loved that part.
God. And since he was not the funny man in the family, what did your father do?
My father was my dad was a worked for AT. He worked for a telephone company all his life, AT&T, Pacific Telephone. My father's got a good sense of humor, but he's not the comedian of the family. He's salt of the earth, baseball man, good hardcore Depression era child.
Hmm. And were you, I mean, in school, were you funny among your friends in the classroom? Were you that guy?
Well, I wasn't a class clown, but I'm very opportunistic. I would wait for opportunities to say something. And, I'll give you this story. I was in class one time, and I'm not really an attention seeker. I'm not trying to get the focus on me. But if something happens, I'd like to move in and then disappear, get the hell out of Dodge. I was in class, and I said something, and everybody laughed, and then there was another kid in class who was really funny, and he said something, and no one laughed, and then a few minutes later, he said something again, and the teacher spun around and looked at him and told him to stop interrupting class with his remarks, and he stood up and said, "Well, Jim does it, and you don't say that to him," and the teacher looked at him and said, "Because he's funny." So part of me was like, ouch. Part of me was like, all right, thank you. So, you know, it was kind of a nice pat on the back. But maybe a little bit. I don't think it shocked anybody that I went into comedy, but I don't think anybody would have predicted it.
Well, and, you know, reading a little about you, you took an interesting path. I mean, you went to
Harvard.
I don't believe
in the linear progression. I think, you know, that's it's boring. I mean, why? Yeah. To me, it's like a career path like Lombard Street in San Francisco. You just got to take every turn that comes and try not to vomit on the way.
But Harvard and Marine ROTC, I mean,
sure,
have gone further afield from where you wound up?
Well, I mean, Harvard was a choice because, actually, I got a Marine Corps scholarship, so that paid for Harvard. Plus, Harvard was far enough away from my home that, you know, my mother couldn't swing by and visit me at college. I put some distance between home. And, and you know, it was different. It was different going to Harvard on a Marine Corps scholarship because it was, there was a few of us that did that. And it was, we used to go to MIT to do the military obligations, but it was kind of unique walking around Harvard. Every now and then we had to show up in the military uniforms, and Harvard being the beloved bastion of liberal ideas, sometimes we weren't exactly the most popular people walking around campus.
Well, yeah. I mean, what years were you in school there?
I was there in 84 to 88.
All right. So I had a feeling you were a few years past the whole Vietnam thing, so it wasn't quite the same as
being in the
70s.
Thank you very much. I would.
Yeah,
I was. I'm not that old. I'm close, but not. I'm not a Vietnam veteran.
No. But I mean, you know, the whole attitude towards the, you know, the soldiers during the Vietnam in the mid 70s. That kind of, by the time the 70s were over, soldiers were treated a little better and had a little more respect. But still, to be on Harvard campus in a, you know, in a Marine uniform, that would be that would stand
out.
Yeah,
you know. He does, and the only time it really kind of blends in is if, you know, maybe you're at a male strip club and you're performing in a military uniform. Then it works fine, but at the time, it was, but it was, you know, the guys that did it were great. I mean, we had a great time. We didn't wear the uniform all the time, so it was just a couple times a week. And, but it was worth it, you know, got a great education, met some great people, and you know, had a good time.
Could you be funny either at Harvard or in ROTC? Were there opportunities for that, or was that kind of frowned on?
No, actually, you know what? I started when I was in the military. They used to have military dinners all the time, and they always had someone MC the dinner, so that, you know, I would get chosen to do that. And I had some friends in Harvard who were just a lot of fun, and we would just get up in front of people. We had a we lived in a house, and they would have these social events. And one of my friends' idea was that, you know, there was people getting money to do art projects for the house, and one was a cheese mural. And he was like, how the hell can they give money for people to put up pictures of cheese in black and white? And so he wanted to get some money and for some project. And his idea was taking pictures of people's heads and their necks and then scrambling up the pictures and trying to match the heads with the necks. And so so that was his response.
Okay.
This is a great guy. And then we decided we called a press conference together, because we started circulating around the house that there were allegations that there were misappropriations of the funds from the art project. And so we called our own fake press conference, and we got everybody, we planted questions in the audience. And this is at the time of the Oliver North thing. And so while he was fielding very aggressive questions from people who are now getting very angry at him, they brought me in as to explain where the appropriations of the funds may or may not have gone. And during my speech, we had some guy stand up and start screaming anti-military things at me. And then we had a friend of ours just physically come in and throw him down and drag him out. And no one knew what the hell was going on. We were doing this, but we had a good time.
And were you Harvard, of course, very famous for its comedians who've come through there, Hasty Pudding, the Harvard Lampoon.
Oh, yeah.
Conan O'Brien, I think, is from that. Did you participate in any of that kind of stuff at the school?
You know, I didn't do any of that kind of stuff. I went near it. I walked around it. I went into Lampoon one time. But I never actually do it. But there was some guy, one of the guys in my house, a couple years behind me, Andrew Robin, went on to be like a head writer for Seinfeld for years. And and Conan was a couple years ahead of me, but... Yeah, I never did any of the mainstream stuff. I went and saw some of that stuff, and mostly my stuff at the time was just, you know, goofing around, doing the things that we were doing on a much smaller scale. But I hadn't really decided I was going to give this a shot yet.
My next question was, when did you do your first stand-up gig? Where was it?
I was actually, I may be the only comedian who's ever started this way, but the first time I was ever did anything like this was, I was in the Marine Corps, and I was actually overseas in Desert Storm. And my colonel called me in, and he said that he wanted to gather all the officers in our unit together, and he kind of wanted to roast them to kind of build some camaraderie, and I was ordered to write him jokes for the dinner.
Ordered to write jokes.
I received a lawful order to make my commanding officer funny the next night I could be, I mean, punishable by, you know, the man had power over me. So I went and I grabbed my buddies, and we sat down and we started writing all these jokes, and we were able to skewer these other officers because we weren't going to be saying them, the colonel was. So we turned the stuff in, and an hour before the dinner, I got called into his office. I said, geez, great. I crossed the line. I'm going to hang for this stuff. And I went in there, and they wanted to ask me some tips, like, what did you mean by this joke, and how should I deliver this? And I was like, all right. So he went out there, and he did fantastic. And I said, all right, when I get out, I'll give this a shot now.
Wow. So your government actually gave you the career that you have today, and it wasn't the one you were brought in for.
I would love to thank all the taxpaying citizens out there of America who thought that they were funding a war, and actually they were. It was a small business loan for me, and it was funding my career.
And now, do you do much humor? I know I can't wait to have the opportunity, but I have not yet been able to see the full act. Do you do much political humor, or you know, do you?
I don't do I don't do that much political humor. I try to keep it so that it's kind of a universal concept. But there's nothing that if something strikes my mind, there's nothing that I'll back away from, just because, you know, funny's funny.
And military obviously did have a big impact on what you're doing now. When did you start doing, gigs out in the mainstream, going out and trying out material, and how did that go at first?
Well, you know, making the transition from a Marine Corps officer to a amateur stand-up comedian is a huge shot to the ego. I came back and I started out as a mobile disc jockey karaoke host because I thought if I could drag my humiliation level way down low, then I would be easier to raise myself up from the ashes. I turned around. I did karaoke hosting. I was in bars. I was in, you know, sushi houses trying to get people's attention. And then I did that for about a year and a half, and then I went up with a tour guide at Universal Studios, which was my big move to Hollywood because nothing says well done like a grueling three-week audition process only to make $5 an hour doing the Universal Studios tour guide. Yeah, we made less money than the guy who was pushing churros at the churro cart. That's how esteemed the position was.
But you probably didn't put on as much weight.
No, we couldn't because we had the polyester tight pants with a clip-on tie, and there wasn't room for growth.
And what were some of the other key points, along your path that have had a big impact and helped you get to the point that you're at now?
Well, when I first got out here, I joined up with a comedy troupe called the LA Connection, an LA Connection Comedy Theater in Sherman Oaks, hooked up with Barb and Steve North, who were running a comedy troupe. And that really, I decided when I got here, I had to join something because I just didn't want to drown and flail around like everybody else in Hollywood. So that was really big for me because it gave me a place to start, helped me develop an act, and then start to kind of get out. But the first thing that ever happened to me was really cool was I got on the Jerry Lewis telephone after being on a couple of years and seeing all the old-time comedians and hanging out with these guys afterwards. And that was kind of a nice rite of passage. When people that you grew up on television watching are coming up to you and telling you that, hey, they thought you were funny. You're like, really? Me? Thank you.
And did you walk? Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about as a performer. Never mind.
Yeah, I just burst my way on the telephone. I said, step aside, Jerry. I got stuff to talk about.
I'm sorry. You know, it's really hard when you have a comedian on to avoid being the smartass that you want to be with all the other guests, and you know better. I should know better.
You know what, Bob? Don't release it. Just let it go. Release the inner smartass in you. Can't do it with me. You know what? If you hold it in, you'll probably start convulsing again, and that's something we need to avoid here on Mr. Media.
That would be a problem, wouldn't it?
So, by the way, how did you get the – go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you how you got the title, Mr. Media. Is that self-proclaimed, local award, nicknamed when as a kid?
Self-proclaimed. Yeah, actually, I used to do a syndicated weekly newspaper column a dozen years ago, and we called it that, and then we started doing the radio show about 3 years ago, and it seemed like a good name to pick up again.
I like it.
Not as good a story as, you know, being ordered by my country to be Mr. Media, but it's all I got.
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. My country just called, and they also ordered me to be Mr. Media. So I'm going to turn it down. I'm going to let you stay Mr. Media.
Thank you. Thank you. Because it is all I got, you know.
Take it, Bob.
You can go out and be funny any day, but this is all I got. I have I want to I know that you've gone back more recently to Iraq. You were in Desert Storm, the original war, and I've got a little clip I want to play. Did I say that poorly?
No, I loved it. Well, it's just, you know, I was just talking about this the other day, you know, because I was in Desert Storm, and obviously at the time it was like the first major conflict since the Vietnam War. So when you come back, people are like, hey, thank you for your military service. But now that we have Iraq and Afghanistan and this generation has something to compare it to, now people are like, yo, you're in the Gulf War. I mean, the first one. Oh, well, that really wasn't a war, really. I mean, that was like 2 weeks in the desert. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure it was very hot and uncomfortable. I mean, too hot and uncomfortable. It sounds like a crappy vacation in Palm Springs is what it turned down to now. So,
how long were you actually there? Because obviously the operation was short, but the build-up and the, you know.
Yeah, I was there for 14 months.
Wow. Yeah, I think people lose a sense of that because, you know, the military operation itself was so brief, but
I know.
You know, you can't have all those troops and all that equipment and all those people there doing what they did just overnight. It does take a while, and then you have to tear down. But I have a clip here. This is from a news report. I know you'll recognize this. This is James going back to Iraq more recently, I believe, to entertain the troops. I want to play this for a second and come back and talk to you about it.
Given what's going on over there, is there any apprehension about your own safety?
No. I know that we will be in great hands, and to my knowledge, they've never lost a comedian yet. I mean, how much do they have to laugh and smile about over there right now? And so if for 20 minutes I can get up there and change their mind or give them something else to talk about the next day, and, you know, if making fun of me will make our troops happy for a day, then that's... I'll give that to them.
I'm happy to be here. People back home are like, are you worried about going out there? I'm not worried about coming out here. First of all, I knew I'd be hanging with the finest fighting force on the planet, the United States Marine Corps. And number two, I carry a little something in my pocket the Marine Corps gave me years ago to protect me in just such a dangerous environment. It's a laminated copy of my DD-214 discharge.
A little military humor there.
So, the old DD-214 joke, I had to dust that baby off.
And yeah, I have to say, coming back to Steve Martin, that reminded me so much of something that he would have done, you know, because he'd just pull out some random number, and, you know, I'm sure that's a real card, but how did it feel going back there to perform after, you know, all these years, and, you know, was it a different... It had to be somewhat different. You obviously are not serving at this time.
Well, that was the thing is, you know, it was weird to go over there and not have to do anything manly. Like, there was no military expectations of you. You know, you walk out there and, you know, it was four comedians coming off the back of a helicopter, tripping over our, you know, our luggage, dragging people, looked at us. And it was a totally different experience. You know, we got dropped off one time near the Syrian border in the middle of the night, and the helicopter goes away. And we're all sitting there huddled in the dark with our stuff, kind of looking at each other. And, you know, we're like, well, what should we do? We can't see anybody. And all of a sudden in the darkness, this Marine just comes out of the darkness and goes, would you like me to let somebody know you're here? We're like, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. But, you know, it was a nice experience. It was really different, but it was good to go out and see everybody and get to do shows this time as opposed to having to, you know, although it was kind of awkward, sometimes you'd get in a piece of, you fly in a helicopter and you kind of look around and you used to do stuff and now you're just sitting there as a passenger just making jokes to people. But it was really, really a great experience first time out having to go back because when I was in Desert Storm, you know, we were there for a little over a year and on the day that we were leaving, they issued us desert boots. So it's almost like a parting game show gift. It's like, hey, how you doing there, Desert Warrior? 14 months in country. Look what you have for you. These beautiful desert boots, perfect for a desert that you'll be leaving now and never see again. So,
wow.
But I went back, but I wore those boots, and I went back to entertain. And those boots have, you know, every time I go back, I strap those babies on because the government gave them to me. I'm sure they cost $7,425 per boot. So.
And did they come to you and invite you to go because you were former military, or was it with, you know, people who invited you, were they even aware of that?
Actually, they didn't know at the time. They saw me at a Boston Comedy Festival, and they just came up to me and asked if I'd like to do this. And then as we were talking, you know, I just kind of let him know that, that you know, I'd love to go back because, you know, I used to be in myself. So that was just kind of a happenstance. That was just a really nice thing. It's a great company, too. It's called Comics on Duty. They tour, you know, all over the country, all over the world, and they go to all the remote places that no one else goes. So we just, like, a couple of comedians drop us off. No big stages, no dancing girls, no nothing, just us. So he does a really good job of kind of getting out there where the people really need to be entertained.
A little different setting than Bob Hope had many years ago, I suspect.
Yeah, we don't go. We do a lot of we go to a lot of strange places. As a matter of fact, we were in Bosnia or one of the European countries, and then we were at a German bar, and I just accidentally did a joke in which I referred to someone at agricultural checkpoint in California as a fruit Nazi, forgetting that I was sitting in a German bar. And the audience I'm looking at, and, you know, my friends are to the right, and it's mostly Americans, but behind them is all Germans, and you're on stage, I'm like, blah, 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 fruit Nazi. And the minute I said it, I looked to my right, and all the Germans are just kind of looking up over their shoulder at me, and all my friends were horrified. I thought, oh, my God, I'm in an international setting, and I just said Nazi over a microphone in a German bar. I just want you to know that I've never exited a stage and ran out of a bar so quickly in my life.
Oh, man. Planning to go back there anytime soon?
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing a whole tour. I'm going to do all the big German bars. They don't understand a word you say until the very end when you go, and Nazi. And, like, there's only two things you're not supposed to say when you're in there, and I said it at the end. It was my big finish.
And fruit and Nazi. So any advice for soldiers who think that today's soldiers who think they're funny and may want to get into comedy?
Today's soldier. That'd be a great ad commercial. Today's soldier. You think you're funny? You want to get into comedy?
Sorry, I think I just spit some of my Dr. Pepper on the screen. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's what I like about the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps would never do that because, you know, the other services' ads are more like, you could have a future and a career, and we'll teach you to be a responsible citizen and go out in the world. The Marines always add, like, you think you can do this? You think you're not going to piss us off when you get here? Give it a shot or go home. The Marines. I was like, wow. They don't really care. If you're out there, you know what? Give it a shot. I mean, what the hell? I mean, there's a lot of guys who get out from the service and then they want to give it a shot. I mean, you just know, all you got to do is start wherever you want to start. Find a stage, jump up, and just know that when people don't laugh at you, try not to take it personally.
Didn't Rob Riggle from the Daily Show have a somewhat similar path?
Yeah, Rob. I've never met Rob, but he was in the Marine Corps too, and then he came out and started doing some comedy writing and ended up doing really well for the Daily Show. So, yeah, there are successful paths. So who knew the military can lead to a successful career in comedy?
Well, speaking of successful career in comedy, could anyone write for James P. Connelly? Or, I mean, the voice, especially, you know, and I hear, as we've talked, you know, sometimes we're just talking, and I hear the voice that I heard you use, you know, when you would be hosting a TV show or something, and then there's that voice that comes back in. And I wonder, I mean, do you pretty much have to write all your own material, or could anyone ever write for you?
Well, I write all my own stuff, but, you know, people that know me and watch me, they'll come up and they'll submit me things, too. And, you know, sometimes your friends, they hear you and they kind of – they get a good feeling for what you do and they'll give you great ideas. And so – but sure, anybody can. I mean, it's – I mean, you know, obviously sometimes you take them and you tweak it a little bit yourself, or sometimes somebody hands you something and you're like, my God, why didn't I think of that?
And what – you know, what else do you want to do? You've done some hosting work. You do some corporate work. I saw some of the corporate clips. I mean, you're very funny in a corporate setting. I loved, and I wish I had grabbed this clip. You were doing some kind of a gig for a company that was international, and you were going to call out people with their awards, and you were apologizing in advance. That was great.
Sometimes people, they hand you this list of names. But here's the award recipients, and I'm like, this just looks like a computer randomly generated vowels and consonants and put them together. And they said, hey, what the hell? Let's see if this guy can pronounce it in public. It's always it's a nightmare challenge because this is someone who got an award, and you know when you're up there and you're saying somebody's name and no one's standing up, you're like, I could try to say it again, or I could just, you know, stand up if you think you won an award. I have no idea what happened after her name.
And I love that you and here I go. I promise not to tell your jokes, but one of the things you said was, if you folks come back next year and you want me to be able to, you want to hear your name, change your name to something I can pronounce.
Exactly. I think that's a fair request.
I think that was very fair. I've been to some of these corporate events, and it's just like, oh, my God, forget it. But,
I'm saying there's nothing wrong. Yeah, there's nothing wrong if next year a bunch of guys named Bob Johnson win an award. That's all I'm saying.
So what do you want to do next? Where do you want to see your career go? Do you want to keep doing the stand-up thing? Do you want a more settled kind of steady thing with TV or film? Or, you know, where would you like to see yourself?
Well, I'm really enjoying doing the stand-up right now, but I love, you know, radio. I radio hosted on XM for a while. Really enjoy doing the show there, TV hosting. The thing about radio is that the wardrobe is fantastic, as you know. You
yes.
know, for all they know, Mr. Media is sitting there in a tuxedo, but we really know he's probably tank top, boxer, spitting up Dr. Pepper on his screen, as you've admitted earlier. So that's kind of the nice thing, is you can sound like you're professional and well-dressed and yet at the same time be slovenly and inarticulate. And that's what I like about radio. We just had a really good time doing it. And I'd like, as a matter of fact, we're talking to SiriusXM right now about trying to move the show I did for National Lampoon to another channel. So that would be a lot of fun. Because we had fun. We used to do, you know, we had comedians as guests. We would just laugh. We would do some fake news stories to really, because, you know, I keep my finger on the pulse. Not on the top news stories, but the ones that fall below the radar, the ones that impact the real America out there. And, you know, I think we might have a few. I might have a few just bursting news items in front of me if you've got the time to educate
really,
your audience
please.
Here.
Absolutely.
Well, this is this one. Speaking of the military, this was in Oklahoma. A U.S. Marine reservist said it won't face charges for trying to stop a woman from stuffing an American flag down her pants during a war protest. The Marine said he wasn't trying to stop her; he just wanted to keep the flag company.
All right.
Here's another one. Wounded veterans from all over Georgia gathered for the Purple Heart hunt this weekend, a quail hunt in the southwest part of the state. Organizers say wounded vets can benefit from getting away from the day-to-day grind of recovery and sharing in the therapeutic qualities of nature. Four wounded veterans were wounded during the hunt.
Oh. That's one of those things you hear, and you know you shouldn't be laughing, but oh well.
No, but you should be laughing. This is why they have these stories. This is my favorite one. A PGA golfer apologized for killing an endangered hawk. Eyewitnesses claim the golfer was hitting golf balls at the hawk and eventually struck the bird in the head. The golfer claimed he was just trying to scare the animal away. The noisy bird was apparently disrupting the filming of his latest instructional video, "I Bet I Can Hit a Hawk with a Golf Ball."
that was the best of the three, without a
doubt. There you go. And we try to,
that
try
was
to
great.
Make them work for you.
So,
we do what we can. So, I really enjoy doing that, and, you know, the TV hosting is a lot of fun. And, you know what, whatever, I'm not that picky. I just really enjoy the whole package right now. I'm having a really good time. And, you know what, I did a show last night. It was a lot of fun. You just can't be getting up in front of a group of people and just having a good time with them.
And let me tell everybody, folks, you can see James P. Connelly on, I think the next gig is August 14th at the Comedy and Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, California, and you can check for more upcoming dates or to order his CD, his comedy CD, The Master Plan. Check out his website, www.jamestconnolly, that's CONNOLLY.TV, not .com, .TV. You can also follow him on Twitter, twitter.com, if Twitter is working again, ever, twitter.com/James P. Connelly. Any other gigs you want to mention coming up?
No, you know what? I'm going to be heading out to Indiana in October, and I'll be out in Erie, Pennsylvania in December. And other than that, you can always go to the website and check it out. I'm always changing and always got new shows popping up. So please feel free to stop on by and tell me you heard me on Mr. Media. That would be nice.
I'd like you to do that too, and I'll look forward to getting to see you somewhere in person as well, James.
Sure.
Like I said, I have never tracked someone down based on a couple minute routine on the radio. It was well worth it. I enjoyed discovering more of your material. And I'll tell people, James has got a channel of his own on YouTube.com. You can look him up there. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on, and I wish you a lot more luck. And I look forward to hearing more material from you.
Well, it's fantastic. I tell you what, can I leave your people with some words of wisdom from me?
Please.
I would love to. This is something that this has made my year perhaps the single greatest year of my life, and I don't always like to share wisdom with people because if everybody's having a good time, then it's not that much fun for me. But what I did is I put together a list of New Year's resolutions, and I know sometimes there's a lot of pressure to come up with things that you want to achieve during the year, but these are bulletproof, Mr. Media. This could be the perfect New Year's resolution list. So ladies and gentlemen, write this down. This is my New Year's resolution that has worked brilliantly so far this year. Resolution number one, to be a better man. Number two, to write my own definition of the word better, making the man that I currently am good enough. Three, in the event that I fail to live up to the new version of the word better, I reserve the right to compare myself to a lesser man. Four, if a lesser man does not exist, I will redefine the word lesser so that any man is someone I can be better than. Five, if all resolutions fail to come true, I will live among the animals, making me the only man and undisputed holder of the better man title. Six, should I be challenged by an ape man of unusual intelligence, all disputes will be settled through a posable thumb wrestling competition or a who doesn't throw their feces standoff. Seven, to come up with at least seven resolutions. Eight, to exceed my expectations. Nine, to make complete strangers hear my resolutions. And 10, to make no more than 9 resolutions. There you have it. A recipe for James, success.
James, you're the best. Thank you so much for being on Mr. Media today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Best of luck to you. Call us again.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye. And folks, for more comedy-related interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Lisa Lampanelli, Aziz Ansari, Judy Tenuta, Ralphie May, Yul Spencer, Lisa Ann Walter, Ant, Michelle Ballin, Robert Schimmel, twice, Bob Alper, The Whitest Kids You Know, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, Truthslant.com, DigitalJournal.com, Vox.com, PodcastPickle.com, MediaFly.com, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can hear this interview over and over again on iTunes, or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you giving up a piece of your day to spend it with Mr. Media. And let's go out with another moment of James P. Connelly.
Hey, man, life is what you make it. It's not about what happens to you in life. It's how you spin it and present it back to yourself. If you do it correctly, you can convince yourself of anything. Well, I was at a wedding a few weeks ago. My buddy said, man, you got so drunk at that wedding, you passed out on the floor. I said, or I got hammered at that wedding, but I only fell once.